year was 1980. The place was Lake Placid, New York, for the Winter Olympics. There were a bunch of college kids who prepared themselves to take on the Russian hockey team, who haven't lost a game since 1964. They're on the street from 1964 till 1980. Bunch of college kids not really prepared to take on a massive Russian hockey team that they've been winning since, undefeated since 1964. So they played that night in February 1980 in Lake Placid, New York. Obviously there was a tumultuous time. Anybody that, people in the room, Rebbeim, Rosh Hashiva, remember the Russians and the Americans did not necessarily get along. So it's much more than just a hockey game. It was a representation of maybe, possibly, people felt what's going to be in the future. The conclusion of that game, as we know, is that USA won 4-3. With the remaining seconds left of the game, you could almost hear, I went online to listen just to make it real to me, is that the remaining seconds of that game, the 5 seconds left, you could hear Al Michaels screaming out as the Americans are about to win, the puck is slowly moving towards the other side, and there's 3, 2, 1, you hear Al Michaels screaming out and says, "Do you believe in miracles?" "Yes," he says. And everybody knows that famous line of Al Michaels, "Do you believe in miracles?" How was it possible that they did this? It was basically impossible. There's no way that a bunch of college kids coming from all across America were going to be able to beat a professional Russian hockey team. How'd they do it? So I think the answer is really that it was a moment. It was one moment in time. And if anybody has seen the movie, I don't usually recommend movies, but if you happen to have to watch a movie, and you're not doing anything else, this is the movie to watch. It was one moment in time that the American hockey team, the kids got together, and it was a change of perspective. They looked at themselves not as a bunch of college kids just going for the fanfare. It was for a higher purpose. They looked at themselves as a representation of the United States of America, and all that it goes along with it, and all of the battles that were ensuing in that time in Iran and everywhere else, and they were going to represent the USA as an international team. But there's one particular scene that we all know, most of us are probably already know what I'm going to say, but there was one particular scene in that movie, which I think was the turning point of the USA team. The time where you can say that from here on they understood what their purpose was and they were going to go for the W, they're going to go for the win. It was a time that they had a practice game versus, I think it was the Norwegians, I think, and they lost the game. They lost the game and they're about to go off the ice. And Herb Brooks, the coach of the team, calls them back onto the ice to stay on the ice. They stay on the ice, and they have what we call, for some of us, anybody on any sports team remembers, suicide runs. They have these suicide runs, just to explain to the Rosh Hashiva what that means. The Rosh Hashiva doesn't remember. The suicide runs as follows, is where you line up at one end of the court, or the rink, and you go, and you run back and forth, from different lines, practice, to work on your stamina. So Herb Brooks said to his team, "You're not going to win like this. You're not going to win like this." And he had them do these suicide runs into well into the night. It wasn't until the captain of the team, Mike Rosioni, he got up and he says, "I'm Mike Rosioni. I'm from Winthrop, Massachusetts." And Herb Brooks, the coach, says, "Who do you play for?" And he answers, "The United States of America." And Herb Brooks gets up and he says, "Men, have a good night." It was that point in time that they understood that they're not just individuals. They're not just looking for the fanfare. It wasn't the publicity. It wasn't anything. But it was a bunch of guys that came united together as representing the United States of America, and they're going out to fight. That, in a way of sorts, is what Mesiras Nefesh is really all about. They understood that Mesiras Nefesh, in order to win, in order to be successful, a person is going to have to give up something very great. Whether it's an outlook, whether it's sleep, whatever it is, extra work, it's going to be something in order for the greater good, in order to go for the gold. Why is Mesiras Nefesh called being Moser Nefesh al Kiddush Hashem? The Gemara refers to being Moser Nefesh al Kiddush Hashem. Why do we say that a person is Moser Nefesh al Kiddush Hashem? Why do we say that a person is Moser Nefesh al Kvod Hashem, for the honor of God? Why do we say al Kiddush Hashem? So I saw Rav Chaim Friedlander, Sif Sei Chaim, wants to explain as follows. He says, Kiddush means to be mavdil, to separate yourself for a purpose. When a person is mekadesh himself for something, that means he's taking himself and he's being mekadesh, he's devoting himself for a purpose just for Kaddish Baruch. That's Kiddush Hashem. You most of yourself at Kiddush Hashem. And this was the essence of Hanukkah. The Chashmonaim felt that they needed to be Moser Nefesh. There was a threat to their religion, there was a threat to their lives, there was a threat to the Torah, all the mitzvos that they had in Gezeris against. So they felt that they had to be Mekadesh Hashem, that the Moser Nefesh al Kiddush Hashem. They had to devote themselves entirely for a higher purpose. They couldn't look at the fact that they had certain boundaries, that they were just chachamim. You know, people look at, you go into America and these comic stores and you buy these Hanukkah coloring books. So they'll have like Judah HaMaccabee, and they'll have like this burly guy with a sword and armor. And it's not really true. You know, it looks just like a Haredi guy in Bnei Brak. That's basically what they look like. And they're going out and they're fighting the Persian army. How does it make any sense? It doesn't have to make sense. Because even if the odds are stacked against you, but a person is willing to be Moser Nefesh, he'll be zocha to an ace, he'll be zocha to a miracle. So why is that? What's the connection, what's the koach of Mesiras Nefesh that the Chashmonaim saw in the story of Hanukkah that led them to the zchus of being zocha to a tremendous ace? So Rav Sifsei Chaim explains beautifully as follows. He says that what's a nes? It's really nida kineged nida. What's a nes? A nes is when a Kadosh Baruch Hu goes and he takes the person, he takes the nation, whatever it is, and he brings them above the boundaries of nature. He's no longer bound by space, he's no longer bound by time. I'm going to split the sea, even though the split can't be split. I'm going to bring down Esh and Mayim together, even though that can't be done. Whatever it is, if you go the mile from your tether, if you go beyond your natural call of duty, so the Midah Keneged Midah of the Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Nes is that he's going to go above his call, above the boundaries of nature, and he's going to create an Nes. So as long as you are willing to do that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will open the gates and everything will be available to you. It doesn't matter who's against you. It doesn't matter if it's the Yavanim. It doesn't matter if it's Iran. It doesn't matter if it's Iraq. It doesn't matter who it is. Once the nation gets together and decides on their own that they are going to go over and over the bounds of their call of duty, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do the same. That's a nes. That's why you're zocha to a nes when you're doing a serious nefesh. The Bach tells us, interestingly, in the beginning of Hilchos Chanukah, the Bach says that the reason why the Chashmonaim were willing to be Moser Nefesh is because they needed to do tshuva. There was a certain laxity that was going on in the times of the Chashmonaim and the Avodas and the Beis HaMikdash, and it's, in general, the Avodat HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So they felt, they saw that there was a need for a tremendous amount of Mesiras Nefesh. And that was the tshuva. They were very, very lax in their avodah. The Chashmonaim got together as a family, and they decided they were going to take on a huge army. Didn't make any sense. How are they going to take on the Yavanim? Doesn't make any sense. However, they had to be mitaking that chet of laxity, of laziness. So what did they do? They went out, and they went the elah. They went over and above the call of duty, and they were zocha to beat a huge army. Doesn't make any sense. Imagine what Al Michaels would have said then if he was reporting, you know, as he's seeing the Yavanim running away and there's a bunch of rabbis who are chasing after them, you know, what a miracle that would have been. The question is, one may ask, if a person looks at Hanukkah and you look at Purim, might wonder, how come by Hanukkah did the Hashmonaim get together and decide that we're going to fight an army? Why don't they just do like Purim? What happened in Purim? Purim, they were also being threatened by Haman. What did they decide to do? They decided to get together and daven fast, and then there was to Yeshua, salvation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu came in. How come by Hanukkah, what Hanukkah was about, Hanukkah, that the Hashmonaim decided they should go out and fight? Why didn't they just go back to the Beis Medrash and start saying Tehillim, and start davening and fasting like they did in the time of Purim? So Rav Chanan Wasserman Zatzal asked this question, and he has a beautiful chiluk. He says as follows: there's a fundamental difference between Purim and Hanukkah. Purim was where Haman got together, Haman and Achashverosh got together, and they were going to decide they wanted to destroy the Jews. They wanted to destroy the nation. There shouldn't be a person called a Jew in this world anymore. Much like Hitler tried to do. Hitler, you should know, by the way, had prepared already a museum to go around the world to show Jewish artifacts, because he thought that there wasn't going to be anything called a Jew anymore. So people should know that one time in this world there used to be a nation called the Jews. That's what Haman wanted to do. That's not what the Yavanim wanted to do. Rav Chanan says that the Yavanim wanted to fight against our dat, against our religion. They want, you can stay, you can live, have children, have grandchildren, great-grandchildren, whatever it is, but just don't believe in your religion. And that, Rav Chanan Wasserman called that a maisa sata. That was the work of the Satan. If somebody's going to come and try to uproot your religion, you're not going to let them win. You have to go out and fight. If it's just that they're going against your body, they want to kill you as a person, so then you can turn to Hashem and do tshuva. Because that's a mice Hashem. Hashem wants to wake us up. That's what happened in Purim. But on Hanukkah, it's not like that. On Hanukkah, they were trying to Hellenize us. They're trying to get rid of our belief system. So that's a mice Hashem. That's not coming from the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Then you work in this world and you try to fight. So much so, the Chafetz Chaim said to Rav Chanan, the Chafetz Chaim said to his Talmud, Rav Chanan Wasserman, he said that if, in the beginning, when the Russians started communism, if the Jews would have gone together from the shtetls, from the little villages, if they would have gone together and decided to fight Tsarist Russia, the Chafetz Chaim said that the Jews would have won the war. There's precedence for it in Hanukkah. Why? Because that's a Maisa Satan. They want you to stay alive, they just don't want you to keep religion. It's a Maisa Satan. You can go out and fight, and Chafetz Chaim said we would have won. Why? Because we would have done it with Mesiras Nefesh, and we would have been zocha to a nes, a miracle, moreover and greater than ever seen before. So we need to realize within ourselves, in these times, that we can also be zocha to nisim. If we just go, and we don't look at ourselves as people that are bound to technology, bound to our phones, bound to whatever it is, styles, and the like, and we realize that, no, we could go and we could propel ourselves greater. So if we try, it's just a different outlook. Just like the USA hockey team did, it's just a different outlook. Do I look at myself as, I can't do this? I can't learn after 3 months of sitting in yeshiva, if you even want to call it 3 months. But I could call 3 months of sitting in yeshiva, and I said, Rabbi, I can't learn a daf gemara. It's just too difficult. Okay, you want to bind yourself by what you think are the laws of nature, so then you're not going to go anywhere. You'll be a loser. However, if a person goes and he says, no, I can be greater, I'm going to change my perspective, then maybe it's difficult. But you know what? The Hashmonaim also thought it was difficult. And everybody thought that they were crazy. But if you just go a little bit above the boundaries that you think you're bound by, so Kadosh Baruch Hu will open the floodgates. It'll be zocha to a tremendous nes. I want to read you a story that I took a few years ago. It's a very powerful story, but really the message is very clear for you. I'm going to read it inside because I can't do justice. It was December 25th, 1938. It was a day of celebration around the world. For many it was Christmas, and for some it was Hanukkah. And for the Geyer family, it was a day that would escape the murderous clutches of the Germans. Shortly after Kristallnacht, the guys had received their passports and visas to leave Germany for the United States. It was a sunny but cold day as their train bound for Holland pulled out of the Berlin station. The guys shared their second-class compartment with two very stern-looking Germans. Arnold Geyer, age 12, and his sister, 15, sat quietly with their parents. In a whisper, Arnold overheard his mother reassure his father that Hashem would forgive him for not lighting his menorah that night. Mr. Geyer was a chazan and a very pious Jew, and had packed a small menorah and some candles in his briefcase. Now listen carefully to the following. Not long after darkness, recalls Arnold, the train slowed and puffed its way into a special railway station at the German-Dutch border. We braced ourselves for our final encounter with the German police, the Nazis, and the Gestapo. Just a few more miles and our old lives would be behind us. The train sat in the station, and the guards watched as the border police and the Gestapo carefully compared lists and prepared to check everyone's passports and papers. Finally, small groups of officers boarded the train for their inspection. Papa looked tense and broke out in a sweat. I was afraid. Suddenly, without any warning, all the lights in the station on the train went out. A number of people lit matches for light, and the glow on their faces was an eerie sight. I felt like screaming. In the confusion, Mr. Geyer stood up, managed to find his overcoat, and pulled 8 small candles out of his coat pocket. He struck a match and lit one candle. Using that candle, he warmed the bottom of the other candles and lined up all 8 candles on the windowsill of our compartment. He quietly recited the Hanukkah brachos, and he lit the candles. For the first time in a long time, I saw a smile appear on Papa's face. Then someone shouted, "There's light over there!" The border police and the Gestapo men soon came to our compartment and used the light of the candle to conduct their checking of their passports and papers. One of the officers commended Papa on his resourcefulness for thinking ahead and packing, quote, travel candles. About a half an hour, anybody who's learned the sugyas, about a half hour passed, and then as suddenly as they had gone off, the lights flickered on again. The officers thanked Papa and left our compartment to finish their work throughout the train. Remember this moment, Papa said to me, like in the times of the Chashmonaim, a great miracle happened here. Why was he zochet to that miracle? And it happened exactly a half hour, the time that you would need to light the shir of Hanukkah left, of Hanukkah candles. Why was he zochet to that? It's pashut. He was zochet to it, and there's a tremendous case. He goes and he lights in front of the faces of the Nazis as they're on the train. He goes and he lights 8 candles right in front of them. And they think that it's travel candles. A tremendous miracle. Why? Because he went over the call of duty. He could have said to himself, listen, I can't do this here. The Nazis are all over the place. I'm putter. Right? People can find putter. You're on an airplane, you're putter. Right? So he's going to be putter over here. He's exempt for lighting candles. No, he goes above. And as soon as he goes above this call of duty, as soon as he goes above what he thinks is the norm, the floodgates open up and he's zochet to a tremendous nes from the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Rav Kook writes in his letters that the machlokas of Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai could really be looked at as in a historical perspective. Beis Shammai says we know that we go 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and Beis Hillel says we go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Rav Kook says as follows. What's pshat that Beis Hillel says you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8? Rav Kook says that you're mostly v'holich because you're constantly working off the generations before you. The generations, Hanukkah represents, the menorah represents the ultimate mysterious nefesh that a Jew has for his religion. So you're lighting one candle, it's the first generation of mysterious nefesh. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Every single light, every single candle is working off the candle prior to it. Every single candle is working off the mysterious nefesh of the prior generation. We're zochet to Eretz Yisrael, we're zochet to Bati Midrashos in Eretz Yisrael because of people like Rav Geyer. The people that were moser nefesh, that looked above. How can I change my perspective? How can I throw myself over what I think are just mere boundaries and move above that? Why? Because I know that there's something important later on. I'm working not just for right now, but the gold medal is ahead. I'm working for the gold. And it's not just about me right now. It's not just about the generation, but I have to also look into the future. I have to be Moser Nefesh, so then and the next year there's another candle that represents me, and then my kids will be also be able to light. How are they going to light? Because we were Moser Nefesh in some way. Chanukah is a time to understand that we're not just living for ourselves. The Chashmonaim weren't just doing it out of, for a chill, obviously. They were doing it because they believed that this is something that they had to do for the future generations. And that's our job. That's why we're here also, the entire year. It's not just about Chanukah. It's the entire year. And we can look at ourselves and say, how am I going to be Moser Nefesh? Because I'm going to have to answer for future generations as well. I don't want to just be a regular Jew. I want to be an exceptional Jew. And that requires Mesiris Nefesh. Every Chag, the Svar bring down, every single Chag has the Ashpa of what happened in history. On Pesach, we're Zocha to the Geula, and as the Gemara says, we're going to be redeemed in Pesach time. Rosh Hashanah is a time of Din, Yom Kippur is a time of Din, and we all go through a Din on Yom Kippur. All the holidays we go and we can actually experience the same exact thing that they experienced in those times. That's why Sephardim have that minhag that they go around and they hit each other with whatever you guys hit each other with on the Leil HaSeder. Why? Because you're going through the same things that the Yidden went through, the Jews went through in history. The same thing is for Chanukah. The Chashmonaim went and they were Moser Nefesh for Kiddush Hashem. They separated themselves in order to better themselves and to better the Jews in the future. We also have that. We also have that ability. It says, "Bayamim Ahem, Bezman Hazeh." What happened then can happen now as well. And if they were Moser Nefesh for something, for the Yiddishkeit, for Judaism, that also is incumbent upon us to find a way to be Moser Nefesh for ourselves in order to for the future generations. And that's why I gave you those cards to fill out. I gave you those cards to fill out because I wanted to make it real. Is that you should look at yourselves and you should say, take this opportunity where the Hashpa is right now starting tonight, starting the next few hours. We have a Hashpa of Mesiris Nefesh. And that's everything that the menorah represents. It's Mesiris Nefesh. And we could do it. A Chanukah challenge or even something small. I prefer over here for this exercise, you do something small that you're going to do over Chanukah. That why? Because I'm going to show Kadosh Baruch Hu that I want the Shefa that he brought down, the Nisim that the Chashmonaim Rezilcha to, I want to have that also. I want to have my own miracles. And as Herb Brooks ended before the USA team played the Russians that night, he said, great moments are born from great opportunity. This is your time. Now go out there and get them. Have a good day.